Chapter 47. It takes less than a minute for Rhadamanth Nemesis Neuraltap to finish its probe of Father Glaucus's brain. In a combination of visual images, language, and raw synaptic chemical data, Nemes has as full a picture of Aenea's visit to the frozen city as she will get without a complete neurological disassembly. She withdraws the microfilament and allows herself a few seconds to ponder the data. Aenea, her human companion Rawl, and the android left 3.5 standard days earlier, but at least one of those days will have been taken up with cutting their raft apart. The second Farcaster is almost 30 clicks to the north, and the Chichituk will lead them over the surface, which is dangerous and slow traveling. Nemes knows that there is a good chance that Aenea has not survived the surface trek. Nemes has seen in the old priest's mind the crude means by which the indivisible people try to cope with the surface conditions. Rhadamanth Nemes smiles thinly. She will not leave such things to chance. Father Glaucus moans feebly. Nemes pauses with her knee on the old priest's chest. The neural probe has done little harm. A sophisticated med kit could heal the filament bore between the old man's eye and brain, and he was already blind when she arrived. Nemes considers the situation. Encountering a Pax priest on this world had not been part of the equation. As Father Glaucus begins to stir, his bony hands lifting toward his face, Nemes weighs the balance. Leaving the priest alive will pose very little risk. A forgotten missionary in exile, destined to die in this place anyway. On the other hand, Nemes knows, not leaving him alive poses no risk whatsoever. It is a simple equation.
"Who are you?"
moans the priest. As Nemes easily lifts him and carries him from the kitchen through the dining area, from the dining area through the book-lined library with its warm fuel pellet fire, from the library to the hallway to the building's central core. Even here, lanterns burn to discourage wraiths.
"Who are you?"
says the blind priest again, struggling in her grip like a 2-year-old in the arms of a strong adult.
"Why are you doing this?"
says the old man, as Nemes reaches the elevator shaft, kicks the plasteel doors open, and holds the priest a final moment. There is a blast of cold air rushing down from the surface to the glacial depths 200 meters below. The noise sounds as if the frozen planet is screaming. At the last second, Father Glaucus realizes precisely what is happening.
"Ah, dear Jesus, Lord,"
he whispers, his chapped lips quivering.
"Ah, St. Teart, dear Jesus."
Nemes drops the old man into the shaft and turns away, only mildly surprised that no scream echoes behind her. She takes the frozen stairway to the surface, leaping 4 or 5 steps at a time in the weighted G-field. At the top, she must punch her way up the icy waterfall, where the frozen atmosphere has dribbled down 5 or 6 flights of stairs. Standing on the roof of the building, the sky black with vacuum and the katabatic storm whipping ice crystals at her face, she activates the phase shift field and jogs across the ice to the dropship. There are 3 immature wraiths investigating the ship. In a second, Nemes takes note of the creatures. Non-mammalian, the white fur actually tubuled scales capable of holding gaseous atmosphere, which acts to hold in body heat. Eyes working on the deep infrared, redundant lung capacity, which allows them to go 12 hours or more without oxygen. Each animal more than 5 meters long. Forearms immensely powerful, rear legs designed for digging and disemboweling, each beast very fast. They turn toward her as she jogs closer. Seen against the black background, the wraiths look more like immense white weasels or iguanas than anything else. Their elongated bodies move with blinding speed. Nemes considers bypassing them. But if they attack the ship, it could cause complications during takeoff. She shifts into fast time. The wraiths freeze in mid-motion. The blowing ice crystals hang suspended against the black sky. Working efficiently, using only her right hand and the diamond-hard blade of her phase-shifted forearm, she butchers the three animals. During the work, two things mildly surprise her. Each wraith has two huge five-chambered hearts, and the beasts seem capable of fighting on with only one intact. Each wears a necklace of small human skulls. When she is finished and is shifted back to slow time, after the three wraiths have dropped like giant bags of organic offal onto the ice, Nemes takes a moment to inspect the necklaces. Human skulls. Probably from human children. Interesting. Nemes activates the dropship and flies north, keeping it on reaction thrusters since the stubby wings can find no lift in this near vacuum. Deep radar probes the ice until the river becomes visible. Above the level of the river are many hundreds of kilometers of tunnels. The wraiths have been very busy in this area. On the deep radar display, the metal arch of the Farcaster portal stands out like a bright light in dark fog. The instrument is less successful in finding living, moving things under the ice. Various echoes show the clear track of adult wraiths tunneling their way through the atmosphere glacier. But these soundings are clicks to the north and east. She lands the dropship directly above the Farcaster portal and searches the sastrugi-patterned surface for a cave entrance. Finding one, she moves into the glacier at a jog, dropping her biomorphic shield when the pressure moves above 3 psi and the temperature rises within 30 degrees of freezing. The tunnel maze is daunting, but she keeps her bearings relative to the great mass of portal metal a third of a kilometer beneath her. And within an hour she is nearing the level of the river. It is too near absolute darkness down there to see by light amplification or infrared, and she has not brought a flashlight. But she opens her mouth, and a brilliant beam of yellow light illuminates the tunnel and ice fog ahead of her. She hears their approach long before the dim ember lanterns come into view down the long descending corridor. Killing the light, Radamanth Nemes stands in the tunnel and waits. When they first round the corner, it looks more like a herd of diminutive wraiths than a band of human beings. But she recognizes them from Father Glaucus's memory. Kuchiat's band of Chichituk. They stop in surprise at the sight of a lone female without robes or outer insulation standing in the glacier tunnel. Kuchiat steps forward and speaks rapidly.
The indivisible people greet the warrior hunter seeker who chooses to travel in the glow of the next to perfect indivisibility. If you need warmth, food, weapons, or friends, speak, for our band loves all those who walk on 2 feet and respect the path of the prime.
In the Chichituk language she has taken from the old priest, Radamanth Nemes says,
I seek my friends. Anea, Rawl, and the Blue Man. Have they passed through the metal arch yet?
The 23 Chichituk talk among themselves of the strange woman's command of their language. They reason that she must be a friend or kin of the Glaucus, for this person speaks with precisely the same dialect as the blind man in black who shares his warmth with visitors. Still, Kuchiat speaks with something like suspicion.
They have passed under the ice and out of sight through the arch. They wished us well and gave us gifts. We wish you well and offer you gifts. Is the next to perfect indivisibility wishing to travel the magical riverway with your friends?
In a moment, says Radamanth Nemes with her thin smile.
This encounter offers the same equation as the quandary of what to do with the old priest. She takes a step forward. The 23 Chichituk exclaim with almost childish delight as she phase shifts into featureless quicksilver. She knows that their ember light reflecting from 1,000 ice facets must be mirrored now on her surface. shifting into fast time, she kills the 23 men and women without wasting motion or effort. Dropping out of fast time, she chooses the nearest corpse and fires a neural probe through the corner of the man's eye. The brain's neural network is collapsing from lack of blood and oxygen, creating the usual burst of hallucinations and wild creativity common to the death of such networks, human or AI. But in the middle of the life-to-death synaptic replay of birth images, emerging from long tunnels into bright light and warmth, she catches the fading images of the child, the tall man, and the android pushing off the crudely rebuilt raft, ducking their heads as they pass under the low ice beneath the frozen-in-place arch. "Damn," breathes Nemus. Leaving the bodies piled where they fell in the darkening tunnel, she jogs the last kilometer or so to the level of the river. There is little open water here, and the Farcaster portal is only a brief metal cord in the jagged ice above. Icy fog and mist roil around her as she stands on the low, broad shelf of ice where heat imprints show how the Chichituk had gathered to bid farewell to their friends. Nemus wants to interrogate the Farcaster, but to reach the arch she has to either bore through many meters of ice or climb the overhanging ceiling to the exposed section 20-some meters above. She phase shifts just her hands and feet and climbs, digging steps and handholds deep into the ice. Hanging upside down from the exposed curve of the arch, Nemus sets her hand on a panel and waits until the frosted metal folds back on itself, like skin being pulled back from a wound. Extending both microfilaments and a fiber optic probe, she contacts the interface module that puts her in touch with the actual Farcaster. Whispers impinging directly upon her auditory nerve tell her that the three sectors of consciousness are monitoring her and discussing events. All during the centuries of the hegemony of man, everyone knew that there were hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions, of Technocore-created Farcaster portals. From the smallest doorway, to the larger River Tethys arches, to the huge spaceborne portals. Everyone was wrong. There is only one Farcaster portal, but it is everywhere. Using the interface module, Radamanth Nemus queries the pulsing, living warmth of the true Farcaster within its camouflage disguise of metal, electronics, and fusion shield. For centuries, humans jumping by Farcaster within the web. At its height, one human analyst suggested that there were more than 1 billion jumps a second taking place. Had served the Ultimates, those elements of the Technocore who existed to create a more advanced AI, the ultimate intelligence whose consciousness would absorb the galaxy, perhaps the universe. Every time a human had accessed the Fatline-connected dataspheres or Farcast during those web days, that human being's synapses and DNA had added to the computing power of the web-wide neural net the core had built. The core had cared nothing for humankind's visceral urge to move about, to travel without energy expenditure or time lapse. But the Farcaster web had been the perfect bait to weave the very fabric of those teeming hundreds of billions of primitive, organic brains into something useful. Now, its hiding place in the interstices of space-time, ferreted out by Mayna Gladstone and her damned Hyperion pilgrims, its web within the web home attacked by the Deathwand device the Core had helped humanity to build, its Fatline connections severed by powers from somewhere beyond the known circle of the Megasphere. All facets of the single, omnipresent Farcaster portal are dead and useless. Except this one. It has just been used. The interface module reports to Nemus what she and all the sectors already know. The facet has been activated by something else. From somewhere else. the portal still registers its connection points in real space-time, in its bubble memory of modulated neutrinos. Nemes accesses this memory. Aenea and the others have forecast to Cum Riad. Nemes must ponder another puzzle. She can lift the dropship to the Archangel Raphael and be in Cum Riad's system within a few minutes. But she will have to interrupt DeSoya's and the others' resurrection cycle to do so, as well as come up with a plausible explanation as to the reason for the shift. In addition, Cum Riad is a Pax quarantine system. Officially listed as having been overrun by the Ousters, it is one of the early justice and peace projects. As had been the case with Hebron, neither the Pax nor its advisors can allow DeSoya and his men to see the truth the planet represents. Finally, Nemes knows that the river Tethys runs for only a few kilometers, crossing through Red Rock Desert of the Southern Hemisphere and passing the Grand Mosque in Mashhad. If she allows Raphael's resurrection cycle to run its course, DeSoya and the others will not be active for 3 standard days, allowing Aenea and her raft of misfits time to pass the length of a section of Tethys. Once again, the equation seems to demand that Nemes finish DeSoya and the others and press on alone. But her instructions have been to avoid that possibility unless absolutely necessary. DeSoya's involvement with the final capture of the one who teaches, the Aenea threat, has been registered in too many full simulations, recorded in too many full sector looks forward to be ignored without hazard. The fabric of space-time is much like one of the elaborate Vatican tapestries, thinks Nemes, and she who begins pulling on loose threads does so at the peril of watching the whole tapestry ravel. Nemes takes several seconds to consider this. Finally, she extends a neural network filament deeper into the interface module synapses. All of the Farcaster's activation route is there, past and present. The memory pattern of Aenea and her accomplices is a fleeting bubble memory, but Nemes can easily see the recent past and future openings. There are only 2 more downriver possibilities in the foreseeable future. After Cum Riad, the something else has structured the portals to open only onto God's Grove. And then, Nemes gasps and withdraws the microfilament before the full import of the last activation can sear her. That last is obviously Aenea's goal. Or more precisely, the goal of the something else who opens the way for her. And it is inaccessible to both the Church Pax and the 3 sectors. But the timing will be about right. Nemes can keep DeSoya and his men alive while still jumping ahead to the God's Grove system. She has already thought of a plausible explanation. Assuming 2 days to transit Cum Riad and another full day on the river system on God's Grove, she will still be able to intercept the raft and do what she has to do before DeSoya's resurrection. She will even have an hour or two to tidy up, so that when she drops to God's Grove with the priest captain and Swiss Guard commandos, there will be nothing visible except signs that the child and her friends have passed that way and forecast on. Nemes withdraws her probe, jogs to the surface, takes the dropship to Raphael, erases any record in the ship's computer that she has awakened or used the dropship, plants a false message in the ship's computer, and crawls into her resurrection creche to sleep. While in Pacham's system, she had removed the creche from the resurrection system and rewired the telltales to simulate activity. And now she lies back in the humming coffin and closes her eyes. The jumps to fast time and the use of the phase shift skin in such quantities tires her. She welcomes the rest before DeSoya and the others arise from death. Remembering that detail with a smile, Radamanth Nemes activates a phase shift glove and touches her chest between her breasts, reddening and rearranging the skin there into the simulation of a cruciform. She carries no such parasite, of course. But the men in the ship may glimpse her naked, and she has no intention of revealing anything through a stupid lapse of attention to detail. The Raphael continues to orbit the glaring ice world of Sol Draconi Septum, while three of its crew lie in their creche coffins, the monitoring lights and telltales recording their slow climb up from death. Their other passenger sleeps. She does not dream.